All right, take your Bibles, if you would, tonight. Mark chapter 12. Mark chapter 12. There's a parable that starts off this chapter where Jesus is talking to the Jews, and I think really talking to everybody. I think, you know, one of the key things in this chapter tonight for all of us is that we have a great opportunity to serve Christ in a lot of different ways. He gives us each different opportunities to serve Him, not only in this place, but as we walk our life in this world. And the message that Jesus gives this group of people is, don't miss the opportunity that God gives you, because He's going to accomplish His will. And if we're not obedient and are not usable for Him to accomplish His will through us, He'll get somebody else to do it. And we'll miss the chance of serving Him and the joy of serving Him, and the reward that comes along with serving Him. And so as we start, and He began in Mark chapter 12, and He began to speak unto them by parables. A certain man planted a vineyard and set an hedge about it, and digged a place for the wine fat, and built a tower, and let it out to husbandmen, and went into a far country. And at the season, he sent to the husbandmen a servant, that he might receive from the husbandmen of the fruit of the vineyard. And they caught him, and beat him, and sent him away empty. And again he sent unto them another servant. At him they cast stones, and wounded him in the head, sent him away shamefully handled. And again he sent another, and him they killed. And many others, beating some and killing some. Having yet therefore one son, his well-beloved, he sent him also last unto them, saying, they will reverence my son. But those husbandmen said among themselves, this is the heir, come let us kill him, and the inheritance shall be ours. And they took him and killed him and cast him out of the vineyard. What shall therefore the Lord of the vineyard do? He will come and destroy the husbandmen, and will give the vineyard unto others. And have ye not read this scripture? The stone which the builders rejected is become the head of the corner. This was the Lord's doing, and it is marvelous in our eyes. There's a similar story told in Isaiah chapter 5 about another vineyard. And again, the owner giving that vineyard over to servants and coming at the harvest time to receive of the wine. And of course, both that one and this one, and by the way, this story is told in all three of Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And in Matthew, it's preceded by another story, the story of a father that had two sons, and went to one of them, said, go work in my vineyard. And the son said, okay, I'll go, but he went not. And then he went to the second son and said, son, go work in my vineyard. And the second son, no, I won't go, but he went. And again, teaching the same kind of story, that God is the owner of the vineyard in these stories, and that the husbandmen, or the people that he rented out the vineyard, represents the Jewish nation, not the political Jewish nation, but the Jewish nation that was formed by the covenant that God made with Abraham, and the covenant that He made with him when He gave him the Ten Commandments, that, hey, if you'll obey me and keep my commandments, I'll be your God, you'll be my people, and I will use you to bless the whole world. I'll use you. Remember, He promised Abraham, I'll use you and your seed to bless all mankind, as long as they were obedient. And so here's a picture of the vineyard. God is the owner. The husbandman is the Jewish nations. And notice that in the story, that the owner did everything that was necessary to make it a success. I mean, he put a hedge of protection around the vineyard. He built a tower so that they could watch out for anything that would come and destroy the vineyard. He put a wine press in it so that they could take the grapes and get the wine out of the grapes. And then, as the owner at the harvest time, he sent his servants, again representing the prophets of God, to the husbandmen to get what was rightfully his. His share of the harvest. And what did they do to the servants? They beat some of them. They stoned some of them. They killed some of them. And he said, well, I have my only son. I'll send him. They'll reverence him. They'll listen to him. They'll be reminded by him of the covenant that that we've made as far as me getting a share of the harvest of the grapes. And in some perverted kind of logic, they said, well, this is the heir. We'll kill him and the vineyard will be ours. They forgot that the father was still alive. They forgot the ownership still resided with the father. If they killed the son, they weren't going to get the vineyard. It still belonged to him. And of course, the son in this story represents Jesus, who was about to be killed by the Jews. And again, get the picture. Here's the picture. God said, look, we entered into a covenant. We entered into an agreement. I will be your God. I will use you. The covenant people of Abraham, the covenant people of the Jewish nation to bless the world. But you got to be obedient. You got to do it my way, so to speak. And God, and when the owner went to a far country, it represents the passage of time. And notice how the time passes and how servant after servant came and how prophet after prophet came. And that's the way God worked with the Jewish nation. He sent prophet after prophet after prophet over a prolonged period of time to remind the Jews that they were his covenant people. They had an agreement together, God and the Jewish people, that they were to be obedient, and then he was going to use them to bless the world. And so he sent the prophets, and some they stoned, and some they beat, and some they treated shamefully, and some they killed. And then he sent his son. Jesus came again to all mankind, but he came to the Jews and to remind them of the covenant that God had with them, and they rejected him. And in just a few days after this, after he told the story, they were going to nail him to a cross and kill him. And Jesus asked the question: what shall therefore the Lord of the vineyard do? He will come and destroy the husbandman and give the vineyard unto others. He'll take the opportunity and the privilege that the Jewish covenant people had and give it to somebody else to bless the world with the gospel of Jesus Christ. And that's what, in fact, what happened. They had the responsibility and the privilege of carrying the gospel to the world. But they disobeyed. Now, again, not all of them, but as a covenant nation, God gave it to somebody else. He gave it to the church. He gave it to the Christians, the Gentiles that the Jews reached for Jesus Christ. Now, the same thing works today. Again, God uses every single person. You may be at a point in life where you can look back and say, well, God used me more before and he's using me less now. And I would just say to you, as I've said many, many times, you have a purpose in the plan of God. If you did not have a purpose in the plan of God, I believe with all my heart he would take you home. He would take you to heaven as one of his children. The fact that you are still here, it means that he still has a plan and purpose in his kingdom for each one of us. The fact that we're still here indicates that. So let's not be lax. Let's not take that opportunity for granted. Let's use the opportunity and the privilege that he gives us every single day to serve him, to be obedient, and to fulfill the purpose that he has for us. So again, so that we can, that we can enjoy being a servant, being faithful, being obedient, and enjoy the rewards that come from serving God. I was thinking about this when Donna was sharing her testimony about Terry coming over and help plant the flowers. And I was talking to a lady at work yesterday. It's sort of a similar testimony to what Angie made. She has a great aunt that's up in her 90s, and she goes over once a week and helps her clean house and does her grocery shopping for and all that. And we were talking yesterday. She said, "You know, I don't know how much longer I'm going to get to do that." And I asked her, I said, don't you get tired of it sometimes? I mean, week after. She said, "Yeah, I get tired of it sometimes, but then I remember I'm not going to be able to do it too much longer. And so every time I go, I try to think, this may be the last time that I get to go be with her and get to go help her." And I thought, that's a pretty good way to think about it. That God has given us the privilege to serve. And you say, well, and again, I remind you about those verses in Matthew that says, "In that we do it unto the least of these, my brethren, you do it unto me." As we serve others, we're serving God. And what a wonderful privilege He gives us to serve Him. And again, the point is, don't take it for granted. Don't be like the Jews where God has to say, "Well, you're not doing it, so I'm going to get somebody else to do it. Because it needs to be done, and I'm going to get it done," God says. And again, what a privilege that He's chosen us. Whatever the task that He's given us to do, what a privilege that we get to serve Him in that way. And that's why I think that verse in Colossians says, "Whatsoever thy hand findeth to do, do it with all thy might, not unto man, but unto the Lord." And if we could just remember that every time we serve another person, we're doing it for them, but more important, we're doing it for the Lord. And He's given us that privilege and that opportunity. So don't waste it. And I would point out to you, just like He did for the husbandman in this parable, that he set everything so that it could be done the right way. He sets everything that He asks us to do. He makes all the conditions right so that we can do it right. I'm not saying this, He always makes it easy, because sometimes it's not easy. But what I'm saying is, He never asks us to do anything that we know that He doesn't give us the capability, and sets the conditions so that we can do them. I mean, just like He did in this story. Okay, verse number 12. "And they sought to lay hold on Him, but feared the people, for they knew that He had spoken the parable against them, and they left Him and went their way." Again, they were after Him, but the common people that heard Him rejoiced because they knew He was teaching the truth. So they didn't give up. They came back. Here's another group. "Certain of the Pharisees," verse 13, "and they sent unto Him certain of the Pharisees and of the Herodians to catch Him in His words." Now, the Pharisees were a group of people. They were religious leaders, but they didn't want to have anybody rule them. They were looking for the Messiah, and they were waiting for the Messiah to come back and rule. So under the Roman rule, the Pharisees were very frustrated. I mean, that's why they were looking for the Messiah so much. They did not want to pay taxes to the Romans. And you'll see why I'm talking about this in just a minute. The Herodians were those that wanted Jewish rule back. They were the followers of King Herod. And when King Herod died, some of his sons were appointed as rulers over different parts of the Jewish nation. And there was four of them. And one of them, after he died, they appointed a Roman to rule that. And so the Herodians, they maybe didn't mind so much paying taxes to the Romans, but they did it to seek their favor so that they could get, you know, Jewish people back into rule. So these two groups of people came to Him to catch Him in His words. They're again trying to trap Him. And then when they were come, they say unto Him, "Master, we know that Thou art true and carest for no man, for Thou regardest not the person of men, but teachest the way of God in truth." They complimented Him. They did not believe what they were saying, but here's what they said: "Jesus, we know You tell the truth. We know You don't hold back on the truth because somebody's standing there. You don't regard man. It doesn't matter who's in the crowd. You tell the truth. You tell it the way it is." And so with that compliment, here's the question they ask: "Is it lawful to give tribute to Caesar or not?" It's one of those questions that if you answered yes or no, you were in trouble. Because if you answered no, it's not lawful to give tribute to Caesar, it's not lawful to pay taxes to Caesar. And by the way, back in those days, you paid a tax to the Romans just for living. If you were a male between the ages of 14 and 65, once a year you had to pay one denarius just because you were alive. If you were female, it started at age 12. I didn't have time to research why the ladies had to start paying 2 years earlier than the men. But from 12 to 65, just for a living, you had to pay one denarius. And the Romans had two cardinal rules. Number one, you pay your taxes. And number two, you don't disturb the peace. So here are these two groups coming to Jesus and said, is it lawful to pay tax or tribute to Caesar or not? So if Jesus would have said no, they would have said, well, all right, he's preaching heresy. He's preaching insurrection against the Romans because it was the law you had to pay their taxes. If he said yes, then they would have come back and said, well, you're the Messiah. If you're the Messiah, why would you say that it's lawful to pay tax to a Roman governor or a Roman government? You're the Messiah. You're the king. So they thought they had him. Verse 15, shall we give or shall we not give? But he, knowing their hypocrisy, said unto them, why tempt ye me? Bring me a penny or one of these denarius that I may see it. And they brought it, and he saith unto them, whose is this image and superscription? So they gave him a coin, and he held it up. He says, whose image and subscription or writing is on this coin? And he says, Caesar's. Denarius had a picture on one side of Caesar and words that said, pay homage to Caesar. And on the other hand, they had a little saying that paid homage to the leader of the Roman religion. Okay, sort of like our coins. In God we trust. We've moved it to the side on these new dollars, and I won't get going on that, but in God we trust. Only their God was the Roman God. And then, like we have pictures of our presidents on the coin, they had Caesar. And so he said, so he held up one of these coins, and he says, whose picture and whose writing is on this coin? And he said, well, it's Caesar's. And here's what he says. And Jesus answering said unto them, render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's. And they marveled at him. You see, they couldn't trap him, because what he said was exactly true. We as citizens of this world are commanded by God to be good citizens. We're to obey the laws. But we are also, as citizens of God's kingdom, responsible to God. And if the laws of a nation contradict with the laws of God, who takes priority? God does. God does. But what Jesus was saying is, look, if the government's laws don't contradict the laws of God, then you are responsible for obeying those laws. But you're also responsible for obeying God. And if they contradict, well, you know which one has priority. Again, our doctrine, or our, not doctrine, but our concept of the separation of church and state was built on scriptures like this. In the book of Romans, it instructs us to be good citizens, pay homage to who homage is due. And we're to obey the laws of the government under which we live. We're commanded by God to be good citizens. But when those laws come in conflict, and the laws of God conflict with the laws of the government, then we are to obey the laws of God. And that's what Jesus was saying. He's saying, render to Caesar the things that are Caesar, and to God the things that are God. Then come to him the Sadducees, which say there is no resurrection. And again, I think these groups kept going back. They started to have a little meeting, and they said, okay, you guys go over here and see if you can trap them. Well, we messed up. We couldn't trap them. So they came back, and they said, okay, you guys go see if you can trap them. So the Pharisees and Herodians come back, and they have this little meeting. They say, well, we couldn't catch him. He was too smart for us. And they said to the Sadducees, okay, well, you go see if you can catch him then. Sadducees were a group of people that believed the first five books of the of Moses, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. Because they did not think that those books taught the resurrection, and you'll see before we get done that Jesus corrected them because it does teach the resurrection. They didn't believe in the resurrection. So they came to Jesus with this situation. Let me just talk about it for sake of time. He said there was this group of seven brothers, and the oldest one got married. And he died and had no children. And as the law prescribed, the second oldest brother married his brother's wife to raise up children. Well, he died before they could have children. And all seven had this same woman as a wife. And eventually, they all seven died, and then she died. And the question was, well, when we get to heaven, when they're resurrected, remember, these guys didn't believe in the resurrection. So they said, in the resurrection, whose wife will she be? Who is she going to belong to in the resurrection? And Jesus, in verse 24, and Jesus answering said unto them, do ye not therefore err? He said, you're making a mistake. You're supposed to be the experts in the first five books, the books of Moses. Because ye know not the scriptures, neither the power of God. He was saying, hey, you've made two mistakes. You're supposed to be experts in these first five books. Well, you don't really know what the first five books say, nor do you know the power of God. For when they shall rise from the dead, they neither marry nor are given in marriage, but are as the angels which are in heaven. And again, these guys had a hard time understanding that God can make things different in heaven than they are here on earth. And we need to be careful about thinking about heaven in an earthly context. Because heaven is going to be different than earth. One of the ways it's going to be different is that there's not going to be marriage in heaven. There's going to be no husbands and wife. We'll know each other in heaven, but there will not be marriage. We'll be as angels. When God created the angels, He created all the angels. Angels don't reproduce. So all the angels that God wanted, He made. And I guess, and I don't know, I guess if He needed some more, He could make some more. I sort of think He made all that He needed at the beginning. But here, these guys said, well, it's going to be the same in heaven as it is here because we'll be husbands and wives and all that other stuff. And Jesus said, no, it's not going to be that way. And He didn't say we were going to be angels. He said we were going to be like angels, in that we won't be given in marriage and we won't procreate. And then in verse 26, and He says, as touching the dead, that they rise. And again, because these guys didn't think the first five books of Moses taught the resurrection, he wanted to help them. He says, and as touching the dead, that they rise, have ye not read in the book of Moses, in the book of Exodus, how in the bush, the burning bush, that God called Moses to go back to Egypt and free his people, spake unto him, saying, I am the God of Abraham, and the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. He is not the God of the dead, but the God of the living. Ye therefore do greatly err. He said, God's not the God of the dead. And He said, I'm the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. Now, when He was talking to Moses, those guys were a long time dead. I mean, they were dead for over 400 years because the nation of Israel spent 430 years when Moses brought them out of Egypt. They'd been dead a long time. And yet He said, I'm not the God of dead, I'm the God of the living, which says Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob were still alive. And for them to be alive, they had to have a resurrection. And so He said, you guys are supposed to be the experts, but you've missed one of the great teachings of the book of Exodus, talking about the resurrection. And one of the scribes came, and having heard them reasoning together, and perceiving that he had answered them well, asked him, which is the first commandment of all? I think this was a true seeker of God. I don't think he was part of this group. I don't think he was part of the group that went back and got their instructions and tried to come and test Jesus. He wasn't asking them which was the number one commandment, which one came first. He was asking them which is the greatest or the first of all the commandments. And Jesus answering him, the first of all of the commandments is, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord, and thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, and with all thy soul, and with all thy mind, and with all thy strength. This is the first commandment. And the second is like, namely this, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. There is none other commandment greater than these." And again, if you remember the Ten Commandments, the first four deal with our relationship with God. Have no other gods before me. Don't take my name in vain. Don't make any idols. And then remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Now, if you love the Lord your God with all your heart, strength, mind, and soul, you're automatically going to keep those four commandments. I mean, you're not going to have any gods before them because you love them with everything that you are. You're not going to make any idols because you love them with everything that you are. You're not going to take his name in vain because you love him with everything you are. You're going to remember the Sabbath, or in our case, Sunday, because you love him with all you are. And he said, second is like unto it, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. All the bottom six talk about our relationship with each other. Honor your father and mother, don't lie, don't steal, don't commit adultery, don't covet. There's one more in there I can't remember. But if you love your neighbor as yourself, you're not going to do those things to anybody. You're going to treat them like you want to be treated. And so Jesus is saying, this is the first commandment, the greatest, to love the Lord with everything you have, and then to love others like you want to be loved, like you love yourself. And all the commandments hang on those two. And here's what this scribe said, "Well, Master, thou hast said the truth, for there is one God, and there is none other but he. And to love him with all the heart, and with all the understanding, with all the soul, and with all the strength, and to love his neighbor as himself is more than whole burnt offerings and sacrifices." And when Jesus saw that he answered discreetly, he said unto him, "Thou art not far from the kingdom of God." He wasn't quite there yet, but he was almost there, because he understood it wasn't the burnt sacrifices and all the ceremony that the Jews went through. It was loving God and loving neighbors. I hope when we get to heaven, we'll get to meet this guy. I hope he made it all the way in. Bible doesn't tell us, but he was close. Which tells us, close ain't good enough. You got to get all the way in. And it says, no man ask him, durst ask him any questions after them. And so Jesus sort of went on the offensive. And Jesus answered and said while he taught in the temple, "How say the scribes that Christ is the son of David? For David himself said by the Holy Ghost, the Lord said to my Lord, set the law on my right hand till I make thy enemies thy footstool. David, therefore, himself calleth him Lord. And whence is he then his son?" What Jesus was talking about was his being. The Jews could never understand, how could one person be God and man? It just didn't fit. They did not recognize Jesus as God because he was the son of Joseph. He was a man. How could a man be God? They could never understand that. And yet Jesus said, "Well, what did David say?" David called him his son, but he also called him his Lord. Said, and so what Jesus was trying to teach him was, hey, I am who I claim to be. I am the Son of God. I'm also the Son of Man. I am that one that has that is divine, but is also a man, the one that was promised. It says the common people heard him gladly. Verse 38, and he said unto them in his doctrine, "Beware of the scribes, which love to go in long clothing." Now, if you wore a long robe and you were a scribe, it was sort of like an outfit of honor. When you were dressed that way, you were recognized as somebody in authority and somebody that others should pay honor to. "And love salutations in the marketplaces." They like for people to notice them and to give them that honor. And the chiefs in the synagogues, I mean, they like to set up on the platform and sit close to the speakers. And the uppermost rooms at feasts. So they like to sit in the places of honor. And Jesus was saying, be careful about these people. They want all the honor. They want all the glory, which devour widows' houses and for a pretense make long prayers, these shall receive greater damnation. These guys would go into widows' houses and convince the widows to give their houses to the church and sort of dip their hand in the cookie jar and got some of the stuff, some of the money. And Jesus is saying, be careful. They like to get all this glory and the honor, but they're really, wolves, and he didn't use it here, but another place, he said, they're wolves in sheep's clothing. So, I'm almost done. Just give me a couple more minutes, we'll finish up the chapter. I know it's 7:30, but, here's this day in the life of Christ. He starts out by telling the Jews, you've missed your opportunity, you're missing your opportunity. And God's going to take it away from you and give it to somebody else. And then these groups of people come and try to trip them up. Should we pay taxes or not? Well, in the resurrection, whose wife is she going to be? And so this day of testing, this day of trial, and by the way, they didn't trip him up. Yeah, they found out that he was a lot smarter than any of them. But notice how the day ends. I think this day had a sweet ending for Jesus. And Jesus set over against the treasury, and behold how the people cast money into the treasury, and many that were rich cast in much. They had a place, it was in the women's court of the temple. There were 13 trumpet-shaped openings that went down into boxes, and you would come and you would cast your offerings into these boxes. And there were many people that cast much into these collection things. And there came a certain poor widow. Now, the word poor not only means poor, but a working woman. One that worked, but did not make enough to meet her needs. That's what that word poor implies. And there came a certain poor widow, and she threw in two mites. I can't remember the name of the coin, but a mite was about an eighth of a penny. So she threw in a quarter of a penny. And there was a Jewish law where you couldn't give an offering less than that. You had to give at least a quarter of a penny. Again, but she had two coins. She had two mites. And she threw in two mites, which make a farthing, or quarter of a penny. And he called unto him his disciples and saith unto them, verily I say unto you that this poor widow has cast more in than all they which have cast into the treasury. For all they did cast in of their abundance, but she of her want did cast in all that she had, even all her living. She didn't do it as many of the others did for show. I think these were metal openings that went down in these boxes, and when they came and poured their coins in, it made a lot of noise. And other people in the room, you know, they couldn't help hear all these coins go into this metal container and down into the box. And, of course, the people that were giving them were hoping, well, I hope they hear, and they look over here and see who's giving all this. And a lot of them went by, and Jesus noticed them and didn't say a single thing. But here came this poor widow, who I think sort of snuck in, didn't want to be noticed by anybody, and probably did take everything that she had. Probably what she made for that day. She was probably not going to be able to eat that night. And she did not do it for show. She did it because she had a love for God and gave to him out of that love. And Jesus said, she's casting more than all these people put together, because it's not the amount, it's the motive. It's what drives the gift. And her gift was driven by love. And she gave everything that she had. Nothing left over. And I think as Jesus, again, left the temple, and this was going to be the last time that he was in the temple until they brought him back and had his trial there. What a sweet way to end. Yeah, the Jewish nation had given up their opportunity, had given up their privilege to be used of God. But there were some, in this Jewish nation that loved God with all their heart, all their soul, and all their mind. And this widow was one of them. And as he made his way out of Jerusalem to go back, again, just a few days to face his trial and crucifixion, it must have been a sweet way to end the day to see somebody that loved God that much. Anybody have a question
or
a comment?
Yeah.